Blog Talk Radio.
Why does the woman have a British accent? I bet she's a Ricky Hatton fan. Tony
Fennecast.
There's my guest host.
Awesome.
Say hi. Okay, that's enough hi out of you.
I guess we should have played Who Let the Dogs Out.
Yeah, right.
He's
a loud thing, ain't he?
And, well, we got a couple Battle of Badges guests tonight.
Oh, cool.
Stinking badges, but they got them. We have the guy with the black eye in the picture, that's what I like to call him. But I'm not going to introduce him by his name. Which, this is the guy with the black eye. Actually, his name is Bob Sweeney, and he is the guy with the black eye in the picture of the New England law enforcement folks on the website for battleofthebadges.info. Actually, the website for the Battle of the Badges 2, which is battleofthebadges.info.
Well, what team is he for? Is he New York or from Massachusetts?
Yeah, and I'm not sure whether he's a correction officer or a police officer, but we'll find that out. Then we also have Mark Gogan, who's, I don't know that much about. I don't know if he was at that press conference or not, if I met him or not, but he's also on the card. We'll have to ask him who he's fighting, what he knows about him. Next week we have Tom Below, who also has some background with the MMA, likes the MMA, so we'll have to talk to him about that. But for tonight we have Bob Sweeney at 8:30 and Mark Gogan at 9. So there you have it. And we'll see what we can drum up for talk before that. I actually have an interesting clip, courtesy of YouTube, ESPN, and CagedPotato.com. All three of them are responsible for bringing me this clip. And it's from Jim Rome is Burning. You ever see that show?
No, I've heard of it. I've never seen it.
Well, usually we start with boxing in the show, but I'm just going to throw it around a little bit, and I just want to talk about the number one UFC story this week, which is the main event for the UFC in Abu Dhabi. Was a 5-round really clown act by Anderson Silva. And Dana White has come out in the press and ripped him to shreds for his act, which is basically, you know, it's a testament to his skill, but it's also kind of like, you know, something that makes you question his sanity. I mean, what was this guy thinking? He was doing capoeira at one point, you know, like, you know, the art of dance fighting.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously he was clowning around and trying to show how skillful he was, and like you remember Roy Jones back in the day when he really used to fool with people.
When he'd sit there and he'd put his hands behind his back like a chicken fighter, and
imagine that doing 5 minutes around for five rounds, and it's to the 10th degree, and that's what Anderson Silva did. But at the same time, he was like barking at the guy. The guy had like no reach at all, and here's this clown who's like fucking 6 feet tall or whatever, and has reach like you wouldn't believe, and movement like way better than Roy Jones, because it's like, you know, it's all over the place. He can duck down, he can knee you, he can hit you from the outside. I mean, he's like, you know, he's got angles like Pacquiao too, even though he's a big guy. Yeah, just an unbelievable fighter. So he knows what he's doing, and he could really just take a guy out at any point. So to just fool around like that for five rounds, just to like make a point that he's that good, I don't know, like, I guess you could say it's irresponsible, but it's up to him the way he wants to fight. I mean, if he wants to do it that way, hey, you know, he's the one who's getting paid to fight, you know. He doesn't have to fight any way that anybody wants. So,
if you put on, like, if you give the fans a five-round joke fest, people are not going to buy your next fight, you know. I mean, some people might buy it, you know, just to see you lose. I know for years, a lot of people would buy a Roy Jones fight, even if he's fighting somebody over a match, just in the hopes of like a Rick Frazier or a Glenn Kelly or one of these no-hope fighters would have a chance to land a lucky punch and beat him. It didn't happen until about 2004. But at the time, that's the only thing that made people pay to watch a Roy Jones fight. Not that they wanted to see him because he was, you know, head and shoulders above these guys, but it was also his style of fighting. It was like, a lot of it was a clown fest, and you're right. Now, the one mistake I made last week again, and now I'm kind of biting myself over it, I always tell you about my one friend, Joey, that's like the biggest, oh, MMA is the greatest thing ever, he wears tap-out shit, and I always want to slap him when I see him. Like, and he texts me last week, because he always invites me over to these events, and I never go. You know, and a lot of times I usually got shit to do. That last Saturday, I had a dinner party, and then I was going to stay home and watch the Umberto fight, which I ended up not seeing for the next day because I fell asleep between fights. I was so damn tired.
How was that?
But Joey texted me in the afternoon. He's like, hey, man, what are you doing today? I'm getting a fight at my house. Or we're watching a fight at my house. And I text back and said, ooh, Berto and Quintana? That would be a really good one. He's like, no, man, the UFC fight. I didn't text him back. Now I'm wishing I would have went over there because the fight was not good. I could have really ripped into him.
Yeah.
I could have, like, this is what you invited me for.
I'm trying to impress the people that just dropped at least 100 mil into their company and have a main event like that. So actually, Dana White said for the first time ever he walked out on a fight. Let me just get it straight from the man himself, courtesy of, like I said, all those folks, Jim Rome, ESPN, and Cage Potato Bell.
Yeah, Chael Sonnen is going to take it to him. And hopefully we never see that again. You know, I would have thought, I'm telling you right now, if he ever acts like that again in the ring, I will cut him. I don't care if he's the pound-for-pound best fighter in the world. I don't care if he's the middleweight champion.
You'll fire him.
I will cut him. Absolutely.
You think after that, like that, the big thing we've been talking about was Hector's win over BJ Penn.
Exactly.
Hector, I mean, in all your years in the UFC, have you ever seen a bigger upset than that one?
No, that was probably the biggest upset in UFC history. That's not...
So there you go. Well, Dana just segued into the other story, too. The BJ Penn got smacked around a little bit by Frankie Edgar, who I actually saw in his UFC debut, I think it was, at in Newark, New Jersey, when I got flown down there by his Giants. Go figure. Now he's a big champ.
Yeah, right. He loves you.
Maybe he'll be sponsored by Giants now. But I think he dismantled Spencer Fisher. Somebody, I probably got it wrong, but he had a good fight down there. He's from New Jersey, so that was his hometown, and I don't know if it was his debut or his second or third fight, but it was the first time I had ever seen him. I know that for a fact. And it was a pretty good fight. He definitely didn't let the hometown crowd there, for sure. But anyway, that's that. It was a pretty decent event all around. Actually, it was the first time I saw two things. It was history means for the UFC as far as I was concerned, anyway. As long as I've been watching it. This is the first time I've ever seen it in an MMA period. Number one, a warning for running around the ring given to Anderson. In the fifth round, like when there's 20 seconds left to go, finally the referee gives him a warning, says he's going to take a point off for Anderson Silva running around the ring. That was the first. And then the other first was, there was actually three firsts. There was BJ Penn was taken down for the first time in 6 years by Frankie Edgar, who's a real excellent wrestler. And then the third thing was, it was the first time ever I saw a guy get helped up in an MMA fight by his opponent. And it was Enzo Gracie got knocked on his ass for like the third time in a row by Matt Hughes, who was already beating up his cousin, the original Gracie there from the UFC. And he got knocked on his ass for like the third time in a row. And I've seen guys let other guys up, like Kung Lee when he knocked Frank Shamrock on his ass. He stepped back and let him right up, you know. That's like a courteous thing to do. But this is the first time I've ever seen it. Enzo Gracie gets dropped on his ass, and he reaches out his hand up for Matt Hughes to help him get back to his feet.
That is my question, though. The fight was not over yet when he did that?
No, the fight was not over. It was the middle of the round, and he helped him up.
What the fuck did you do that? That's the dumbest thing you ever heard.
His ass. It was great.
I remember watching a lot of, not a whole lot, but I went to a couple of college wrestling matches when I was at Lock Haven, because Lock Haven had a really good team. And the one little kid on the team, Terry Tolot, who went to the Olympics a couple years later, he would take him down, then let him up and take him down again and get more points. But he never helped the guy up. And in a sport like, you know, a mixed martial arts where it's like, you know, there's no timeout and the guy goes down. You know, there's no A count or anything. It's like not like, you know, he could go to help the guy up, the guy could an arm bar or something, the fight's over. I don't know.
Yeah, the only sport where it's cool to help your opponent up, I think, is football. And that's only after the whistle blows.
Yeah, the whistle blows.
I mean, this is ridiculous. And I remember what I said to you last week about that fight. I don't think I made any other predictions, really, on what was going to happen. I might have thought that BJ Penn was going to win, but I remember I clearly said, you know, what's going to be the difference in this fight is that Matthews has more recent experience and regular experience. And Gracie's been out of the game too long, and it's gonna come back to haunt him. That's exactly what happened. He started off pretty well, but he just didn't have enough heavy hands to get to Hughes, and then Hughes just used his better, well-rounded game to just pick him apart. Really embarrassed him. And to that point, too, the point where you're actually getting helped up by your opponent, and it feels that bad for you and still kicks your ass that bad, it's just like, it's unbelievable. But, you know, it's funny, I've seen Dana White throw people out of the UFC for less, but you'd never see him throw a Gracie out like that. So we'll probably see Enzo fight again, but just not somebody that caliber. But anyway, that's enough UFC for the time being. We'll get back to that later. Speaking of the Berto fight, you did eventually get to watch it, I take it?
Yeah, I got to watch it the next day. And, you know, I mean, I don't know how much of it was, I don't know if Berto tore a muscle in his bicep during that fight, and that kind of hampered the use of his left arm. He did come on, he did end up scoring a stoppage, eighth round. But some of the things, and Carlos Quintana is a good tough fighter, not a big puncher. He kind of landed a lot of flush shots, and I mean, there were times it looked like he had Berto a little bit stunned. And I mean, now what happens when Berto steps on against the caliber of a Shane Mosley, a Floyd Mayweather, Kermit Cintron, he ends up fighting a guy like Paul the Punisher Williams, any of those guys, you know, from 147 to 154 plus.
I don't know. I mean, he's got good skills. I mean, I just don't know if he's putting the whole pack together. I mean, I personally like Andre Berto. I mean, I think he's a hell of a class act. You know, a good guy. You know, he's good for the sport. He's an exciting fighter. It's just one thing is when he steps that really, really elite level of opposition, the Mayweathers, even imagine he fought a guy like Manny Pacquiao. I couldn't see him going more than 3 or 4 rounds right now. They're talking about maybe down the road fights with Timothy Bradley. Who was the other one they mentioned on there? Devin Alexander. So all good fights and all guys that would, you know, give birth to him, you know, all hell of a run for his money.
Did you happen to witness the heavyweight fight of the century over the weekend?
What, Holyfield and Bertha?
Of course.
I heard the Rubio took him out. I didn't see it, but I read about it.
In boxing?
I don't think so.
Did a guy who looks like Homer fight anywhere else in the world of boxing? Doesn't he look like Homer Simpson? In that, remember Roderick Tatum or something like that?
Especially with that beard. Especially with that, like,
fuzzy beard. I was like, how is he any Federation's champion? So
now, my question is, I mean, Narbonne has always been a guy that was, like, always, you know, not that he was never not in shape, but he just looked fat. When is he going to fight Butterbean? That's the question I got.
Yeah, there you go. That's his retirement plan. He's going to go to the 4-rounder. He's going to be the next Butterbean. The new king of the 4-rounder.
Rich, before we move on to anything else, I just want to tell you about some of the wheeling and dealing I was doing this past weekend.
Really?
I was down at the fight, down at the top, you know, obviously you've seen my report. It wasn't the greatest fight card. I mean, the promoter is a nice guy, but, you know, when we were talking about his ticket prices, and my dad is so used to doing shows like Russell Peltz or, I forget the other one that was, or even, other people that run the Blue Horizon. So he's always like, yeah, man, you should try to get a front row. I said, Dad, front row is like $100. He goes, are you out of your fucking mind? I said, no, I'm not. I said, that's the problem. And he's like, who's in the main event? I'm like, yeah, it's Corey Evans. The sixth round, he goes, you're asking for $600 for front row seat for a six round fight in the main event?
Why, for press passes? I mean, you can get in for free.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, a lot of times, I mean, I could, but the one thing that I always turn against going for press passes for is when you get a press pass, you are, okay, you're right up with the ring, which is kind of cool, but you're working. That's the thing. You are working. Between rounds, I'm running around, I'm bothering somebody. You know, I'm running around cards. I'm talking to people. I didn't even sit in my seat. I never even got to my seat. I ended up sitting with one of my old trainers and another guy from the gym. These are all guys that I hung out with. My friend Simon Carr was there. He's running his own clothing line now. Simon Carr had this sequin-looking jacket that looked like something Lion King would wear.
Oh, there you go.
And now all the ring car girls were wearing punchline clothing from Simon Carr. It's like, hey, Simon, I said, when do you want to get back on a radio show and promote your clothing line? Shit. Simon jumped at that opportunity so fast. So I said, all we got to do is just get him on the line, put the phones down, and let him go. All
right.
That'd be an easy interview we do.
We can make that happen.
Simon wants to come back on. He wants to talk about his clothing line. And
just send me some samples, and I'll throw some.
But it was a good time today. I was talking to Mike Jones. He's a young up-and-coming Philadelphia fighter. I saw him when he was fighting 4-rounders, and he just won the NABO junior middleweight title.
There you go.
Or was it welterweight, maybe? Welterweight or junior middleweight, I don't remember. But he's fighting on the Kelly Pavlik undercard this week as the co-feature down Atlantic City, which that's a hell of a step up for him. So I talked to Mike Jones. I got a photo of him, and the fight needs unlimited card, told him to get his ass on the show. And the whole reason we were going to the fight card was because the one girl was fighting, and there was a girl I was taking the photo of. You know, we were a pretty girl. She was supposed to fight. My dad was working with friends of hers. Her fight got canceled day of. So basically, for some of the people that pay for top dollar for these seats, they spent $100 for three four-round fights, two of the fighters making their pro debut, and one six-round fight that ended in three rounds. So basically, you got 15 rounds of action for $100. That's a cost of like, what's that, like $7 or something a round? Yeah, I couldn't do it. But, you know, I got the cheap tickets, got my camera in there. One of the security guys comes up to me, like, all big and bad, like, right after the main event was over. He's like, how'd you get that camera in here? I just pulled it on my wrist. The press pass, thank you. Okay. I'll give you a fucking smack.
Oh, yeah. I remember one time I was at the fight in Brockton with Cage FX, and I tried to go just to the bathroom. Like, a security guy was giving me shit. And I'm like, I got a camera right here, buddy. The press pass right here. Oh, no, they didn't give me a press pass. So that was a lie. They ran out of press passes. They had so many people there at that event, that stadium. It's a shame because they couldn't get that many people there for the Rocks games. The Rocks team went bankrupt.
Yeah, I know.
But anyway, we got a couple big fights coming up this weekend, and but you also said you have a special guest tonight. I know you got beat by your mom in fantasy football, but
I was joking about that.
Not really with you. Oh, that was a joke. Oh, Charlie Bad.
I had her with me?
Ha ha.
I had her with me when,
when you first said that?
Yeah, when I first said it, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, then let's just talk about the upcoming boxing events here. Because I got a couple of them right in front of me. Before we get Bob Sweeney on our phone. That guy kind of looks like Homer, but a little better shape. It's funny, everybody talks about it. Oh, who's that guy with the black eye in the pictures? Because it's right on the big poster, too. The guy with the black eye. Who's that guy? So, it's one of those things. But we have the first fight of the week to talk about is your boy, Hank Lundy. He's on that card.
Yeah,
he's fighting.
My dad was
over
17-0.
Go ahead. I'm talking over you. Go ahead. What are you saying?
Tony! What?
Are you there, buddy? Are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
What were you trying to say? I was talking over you.
I wasn't trying to say anything. I was saying, yeah, Hank Lundy's fun. I said my dad was excited when he heard that.
Oh, okay. All right, well, the main event is Tony Thompson versus Owen Beck, which is a pretty decent heavyweight fight. Thompson's 33-2 with 21 knockouts. Beck is 29-4 with 20 knockouts. And Lundy has 17 wins, 10 knockouts, 1 draw. And he's fighting Tyrese Hendricks, 18-0 with 7 knockouts and 1 draw. So a few less knockouts, 1 more win. Same amount of draws. I just saw him, Henry, which we call Hank most of the time, right? Goes by Hammer and Hank for a nickname.
Hammer and Hank.
But BoxRec calls him Henry. It's Hank Lundy. I just saw his last fight at the Roxy. And did a pretty good job, although the other corner disagreed with the decision that went in his favor. I think he definitely won the fight. He controlled the pace, set the tempo, and he landed the harder shots. But, you know, the other guy was kind of more of a journeyman than a undefeated prospect here, like this Hendricks looks like. So we'll see. It's going to be a little test for Henry. Good old Hank. He's going to have a test, but I think he'll pass it. He'll be fine. He'll represent Philadelphia well when he goes to Memphis, Tennessee. And it's going to be on ESPN2, so you get to watch it, Tony.
Yeah, I'm sure. That's why I was very excited about this.
So that's fantastic. Hank Lundy is moving up in the world. And we hope that he moves real far up and gets a big world title. So we can always be like, we interviewed him like 6 times already. That guy. We'll get him on again. But that's Hank's card there. And that really does it for Friday night. That's the best card of the night there. So ESPN scored with that one. Might be the best part of the weekend, actually. I'm looking at this. We do have another few fights worth talking about, of course. Just had one here. Seem to have lost it. Oh, here's the mismatch of the week. for sure. And it's going on in Colombia, so maybe the promoter is doing a lot of coke when he makes this card. The main event, a 10-round lightweight fight, like you need 10 rounds, between Elito Julio, who's 39 and 17 with one draw, and 35 knockouts with the 39 wins. Guess who he's fighting? Evaristo Tordesilla, who is 1-12.
Nice.
39-17 versus 1-12. I don't know who's winning that, but I bet you nobody's got money on Tordesilla. I don't think it's
him. His family might.
But actually, up in Montreal, we have a nice double co-main events going on here at the Bell Center. We got a 12-round super middleweight fight between Lucien Buch, 25-0 with 20 knockouts, and Edison Miranda, 33-4 with 29 knockouts. And also the IBF super middleweight title is on the line for that fight. So there. The 10-round middleweight fight between Renan St. Juste, 20-1 with 13 knockouts, and Dionisio Miranda. Is he related to Edison? I don't know. 20-5,
oh, yeah.
18 knockouts. Must be, if they're fighting on the same card like that. So for the NABA middleweight and WBC Continental America's middleweight titles. So, that's that. Let's see what else we got. Gotta go to page 3 here. We're moving fast through the box rack. Nothing's jumping out at me. Whoa, maybe we got the mismatch of the week wrong. There's a worse one over in Slovakia. Somebody, Zoltan Kaloxai, 40-10 with 30 knockouts, is fighting Attila Kalman, who's 0-1 in a round away fight. Good luck. Kelly Pavlik is fighting this weekend.
Yes, he is. That would have been, the rest is gone to that one. That's the one he's fighting Sergio Martinez, who had a real good fight with Paul Williams. And Martinez is quick hands. You know, he's just one of those slippery fighters. Thing is, I mean, he stunned Williams, he hurt Williams, he knocked him down. Martinez is still not a puncher, in my estimation. And I think what's going to happen here is you're going to get close by. He's going to make things tough on Pavlik just because of his awkward style, his quick feet, and his movement. Because Pavlik's not the fastest guy in the world. And I think Pavlik's going to have to rally down the stretch a little bit to win a decision. I don't see Pavlik stopping him.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. Like I said, pretty well matched. But that's just Pavlik is... Is it 36-1 with 32 knockouts? Martinez is 44-2 with 2 draws and 24 knockouts. So, like you said, it sounds like Martinez is more a speed guy than a knockout guy. He's got a 50% knockout rate, though, over 50%. So, you never know, you know? See who shows up. The guy who knocks guys out, or the guy who boxes 12 rounds. But also the other Mike Jones, you mentioned the prospect Mike Jones, established 16 knockouts Mike Jones, is fighting in the co-main event on that card, at welterweight, and he's fighting Hector Munoz, who's 18-2 with 11 knockouts and one draw.
That's a good step up for Mike Jones. He's got a good package. You know, he's tall. You know, he's got long arms, he's got good power, he's got good speed. I think the biggest test right now, I mean, he's gone the distance a couple times, so it proves that, you know, he can, you know, he's got stamina. I think the biggest test is, you know, what happens when either he gets hurt or when he gets hit on the chin. I mean, that's really the only question that hasn't been answered yet.
Yeah, it's a pretty good card. There's also another fight on here. Now, that's actually for, before I move on. That fight is for the NABA welterweight title and the vacant WBO NABO welterweight title. And if that's not enough NAs for you, tough. We got also a couple oldies but goodies here. I guess not really old in this case, but blasts in the past a little bit. This is a, what is he, the nephew of Tommy Hearns, Ronald Hearns?
His son.
His son. It's his son.
Yeah.
His son is fighting an 8-round light middleweight fight. He's 24-1 with 18 knockouts, and he's fighting Delray Reigns, who's 17-7 with 12 knockouts and one draw. And also, this is the real blast from the past, from heavyweights, the old heavyweights. Dominic Quinn, 32-6 with one draw, 21 knockouts, fighting Terrell Nelson, who's 8-9. So, I don't know, this must be his tune-up fight. We're going to come back. Turn his own comeback trail. Or his own circus act trip. I don't know. I don't know when he last fought. Let me click on him. Just the last card we need to talk about.
Congratulations. You can select and receive a $1,000 Walmart gift card.
Woohoo!
All right, Tony, split it with you. I'll split it with you.
Nice.
He actually fought in 2009, in December. Won a unanimous decision in a 6-rounder. And he fought in April of 2009, too, in a 10-rounder. So, actually, he hasn't really taken a break. I thought he was... He was a guy that went way, way back, but apparently he's been around for a while. But he hasn't stopped. He hasn't taken a break. My bad. Maybe I'm thinking of Tommy Gunn instead of Dominic Quinn. I don't know what's going on with him. Anyway, that's about it for the boxing cards upcoming. We'll talk about MMA a little bit later. Got another couple stories that are interesting. It's on the fighter show. There's a little shake up in the matchups there. We'll talk about later. We got to get Bob Sweeney on the phone here. And Bob Sweeney is going to be fighting in the Battle of the Badges 2 event. You go to Battle of the Badges. info for more information on that, and Bob will get more information about his opponent, who he's fighting, what he knows about him, and you know, his background as well. So without further ado, let's type in his digits here, get him on the form, and he can talk about you know, what he's going to do to this guy, because he's
okay.
Gonna, We talked to Adam Quitt, another local New England guy from the New England law enforcement side of it. And he's training hard. He's got a local rivalry, but this guy's fighting an FDNY guy from what I've heard, and he's a heavyweight. So he's like, you know, got a lot riding on him in this rivalry. We want to win. We want New England to win. We don't want these New York guys stealing the show. We don't really care either way, as long as we sell tickets.
Yeah, right.
It's just nice to be that bragging rights.
Hello?
Bob.
Yes.
Hey, how's it going? This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
How you doing today?
Good. We also have Tony the Tornado on the line here.
Okay.
Yo.
Billy.
What's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good. How are you tonight?
Not bad.
All right, so, well, we're just talking about this Battle of the Badges 2 event. Now, what do you know about your opponent here? It's an FDNY guy, right?
Yeah, he's a New York guy. I guess he's 230. I don't think he has many fights.
And how many do you have? How did you get into the fight team?
I work with the Department of Corrections, and they were talking about the fights, and I went to it a couple times, and... I was always interested in getting in the ring, and I just figured I'd give it a shot.
So you just recently started fighting?
On the Marine Corps, I did some tough man contests, and, you know, I took up boxing a while ago, but I just picked it up again about 4 months ago, 3 months ago.
All right.
For the fight.
And how did you do in the tough man?
I did all right. They weren't, it wasn't really anything like this, because it was just kind of like just get in the ring and go.
Right.
It wasn't anything, I didn't train for it or anything like that.
But anyway, what have you been doing to get ready for this? I mean, this is like right into the fire here. 5 months ago you started back into it, so you must be taking it seriously.
Oh, yeah, I've been doing 6 days a week, about two and a half hours a day, 3 hours a day. I'm at Camp Get Right in Worcester, and I have a couple coaches that have been training me, taking it very serious, actually.
Yeah. Well, I know everybody always asks when we show them the poster, who's that guy with the black eye?
Yeah, that was me, yeah.
Actually said today, he goes, yeah, we'll get you an interview with the guy with the black eye in the poster, you know?
Yeah.
So everybody was kind of like, wow, you know, these guys are intimidating looking. We had that first press conference and you guys all showed up.
Yeah, I was sparring and I got that. We went a little too aggressive that day, but it's all held up.
You know, that just shows that you're willing to trade, you know?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it, actually.
But the worst I ever did in sparring, I still use this story even though it's been about 10 years ago. I was sparring way back in the day down in Philadelphia. And at the time, my eyesight had been getting so bad that I would wear glasses all the time. And then, but when I get in the ring, my opponent in the other corner was just a blurry image. And I could see that there was a person there, obviously. But I really even couldn't make out the person's face from that far away. Then I got contact lens, me being the Einstein I am, I was sparring with contacts in them one night, and we had a clash of heads, and I took the guy's top of his head right into my cheekbone, and my whole eye was shut. I couldn't get the contact out for 3 days.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And, Bob, how did you get in touch with the whole corrections officers, the other officers that are involved with this?
The guys I work with, there's two other guys, Mark Goldman and Tommy Bouya.
Those guys are both corrections officers too?
Yep. And they're both, well, all three of us are fighting. And they're fighting.
Those guys at the first press conference too? Did I meet both of them?
Yep, they're both there.
Oh, all right.
Yep.
I got a short memory here.
Yeah, they're both there. They've been training really hard. I think you're telling everybody out of anybody.
I mean, I don't care. FDNY, of course, it's a big name, you know, and they obviously have a nice, difficult training program, I would think, to even become a New York fireman or firewoman, firefighter, I should say, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, pound for pound, I would think of any civil servant on the planet, you know, a corrections officer would have to be the toughest. How many times a day does a police officer have to get in a fight, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I've seen just watching some of these reality shows about the inmate situations in some of the prisons. I mean, I know these guys, they don't mess around. They like to get in fights. What else do they have to do?
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Stuck in their cell 24 hours a day, or they could fight a corrections officer.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what they deal with all the time.
And get bragging rights on the block, you know? So you guys got to deal with so much stuff. I mean, obviously, that's got to play into the ability to box, right?
Well, I mean, it's individual. Some guys, I've seen some real big guys that just can't fight. And then some guys that are just, you know, the average guys that you wouldn't think could fight. And they're amazing, you know? And it's just on, you know, individual person. But most of the guys that I work with at the joint can handle himself pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, boxing is boxing, but, if a fight breaks out in a bar, I want the corrections on my team.
Absolutely, yeah. Appreciate that, yeah.
So I've been giving you guys all kinds of props, you know, saying I'm looking forward to watching all you guys fight. And actually, Tony Petronelli, who you saw at the press conference there,
Yep.
was even saying, geez, all these guys look dangerous.
it should be interesting, that's for sure. I mean, the turnout, I heard it's going to be a lot of people up there at this in Boston. It's going to be a big turnout. Everybody's going.
Yeah, definitely.
Everybody I'm talking to,
we just had a meeting for it today at the Boston Athletic Club, and they're talking about getting something on WEEI and on TV on some one of the local channels. So they're definitely going to get the word out. And then I also heard somebody tell Andrew at the Boston Athletic Club there, you know, I want you to wallpaper Dorchester Ave there with those posters. So.
Yep.
He wants it posted everywhere, and that's a good idea too. You know, you get that whole area plastered, you get the local crowd in there as well to walk in. And we already have, I think, at least a couple hundred tickets sold in advance.
Right.
And the internet sales are starting to pick up, so it's definitely, it's almost on autopilot at this point, but, you know, there's definitely time also for one last big push to make sure we get over 1,000 people there, which is possible, for sure.
Oh, that's going to be amazing.
I'd like to see that. I know they got 700 seats coming, so.
Oh, really? 700?
They're expecting at least that much to want to sit down.
Wow.
The rest are going to be in.
I had no idea it was going to be this big. The one I went to in Mansfield a couple of years ago, it was a lot smaller, and it just seemed that these guys, when they fought, that the crowd was, you know, it was a rowdy crowd, and I can imagine what it's going to be like with 1,000 people.
Yeah, it's a big area too. I mean, it's like a whole tennis court area, and they're taking all the nets down and everything, and just putting a ring right in the middle. And you know, lots of lighting, unbelievable roof height, so it's going to echo. It's going to be a nice event, nice environment there. And I guess they're also having some kind of police event there this weekend at the Boston Athletic Club.
Okay.
So I'm sure they're going to be hyping this event to all those guys that show up for that.
Yeah.
So you're going to get a lot of local law enforcement that are going to be talking about this and showing up at the last second. I think it's going to be a good crowd.
Oh, absolutely. I know tons of people that are going. It's just amazing. I mean, just the one in the DOC that are going. You know, they have 5,000 members in the DOC, and I know a lot of them, they're talking about this one more than most, you know, so maybe they turn out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, part of it is going to be a tribute to the fallen as well.
Yeah, and I heard that, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be pretty much giving tribute to a friend of mine from Norwich and the FDNY guys who were lost at 9/11 from the boxing team. Actually, there was three of them. We talked to Bobby McGuire about it a few weeks ago, had him on the show, and just some amazing stories about all those guys. And Bobby himself, just an incredible story about him just sifting through the rubble looking for his nephew, and stayed on the job till he found him. That was like almost a year later. A few months later, but that's dedication to duty for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's been boxing forever. He started the whole FDNY boxing team back in the 80s or late 70s, I think.
Yeah.
So he's a good guy. He knows what he's doing. He's got his guys together.
I heard that those guys they have a lot of fights on their belt. Is that true? Do you know their history? Like most of them have been fighting for a long time now, or?
Well, I don't know if they all have
they travel
fight,
and stuff.
But, most of them, I would say, have some kind of competition under their belt because those guys travel everywhere and they do fight
right.
them. You know, it's like a good publicity thing for the department, so I'm sure they get a lot of support locally, and they do. Bobby just told me in the interview the last time that they just went 14-13 in the rivalry with the New York Cops.
Okay.
Because I said to him, you've got to get a lot of these people in the crowd are going to be from New England. You know, I hope you guys are ready to get, heckled.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, oh, yeah, we're used to it. We just went up one in the New York Police Department rivalry, and there's, like, way more cops in New York than firemen.
Right.
So they're always the underdog there, and they always get heckled in their own city. But, yeah, they're ready for it. And I would think that, at least everybody on the card, I think, has at least some experience sparring, good sparring.
Right. Yeah.
So they're going to be ready. Whether they're going to be good, that's a different story. You know, a guy can work as hard as he wants, still not be good.
Exactly. Yeah, you have to have that natural ability. I think you have to have it.
Yeah.
If you don't, like you said, if you don't have it, you're not going to get it. And by well, you can work on it, but you just, you have to have it. You know, you have to have the skill. And
the most important thing I always tell everybody now, like a lot of you guys, a little bit more mature, a little bit, you know, educated, you guys are working hard, you know, you're, service professionals, whether being firefighters, police officers, or whatever, you know, that's a strenuous job. But I always tell a lot of kids when I'm dealing with the amateurs, younger, teenagers and all that, it doesn't matter how good you are, you have to be in shape. You
right.
know, if you don't work hard in the gym, you can have all the talent in the world and it ain't going to help you in that ring.
That's true. I learned that the hard way when I jumped in the ring a couple months ago, and I thought, I had it, and I wasn't in shape until, you know, now I can do it, but, you know, a couple months ago I jumped in there and I felt it.
Even when you're in shape, you can get blasted.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But when you have the wind, it's much more better, you know, because you run out of wind, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you about the worst feeling I've ever had being in the ring was knowing that I was out of gas, I had nothing left, and I still had a couple rounds to go. That was a bad feeling. And then on the flip side, a great feeling was fighting the guy one time, and he was trying to take it to me. I mean, I was picking off most of his shots, but after about, in the first round, he pulled back off and started gasping for air. I smiled at him because I wanted him to know that I knew that he had nothing left.
Right.
And the beating was about to commence.
Right.
Actually, my best fight, I mean, boxing, wrestling, any competitive, street fighting, whatever, any combat I've ever been in, I would have to say my best moment in a fight period would be when a wrestling match I had. It wasn't for a title, wasn't for, you know, it wasn't pivotal to the win for the team or anything, but I had a high school wrestling match with this kid. And I wrestled my senior year like 20 pounds above my actual weight. I weighed about 155 and I wrestled 171. So I never had to cut weight, but I always had to fight guys who were bigger than me. And I fought this kid, 171, and went to overtime. You know, we went back and forth in the first three periods, and then it goes to overtime. And we're getting up from the ground, both of us at the same time at the end of the third period. And my coach had said something about this, you know, always don't never show that you're tired, but I just naturally wanted to get right back up and get to the line and just finish this fight. You know, I just wanted to get it over with. And I know, you know, in overtime, the first takedown wins, you know. So I went in, and as soon as that guy started to get up, I realized he was tired. You know, he got up really slow. And I could see it in his eyes. You know, he was just dead tired. And he just got real slow to the line, put his foot on the line, ref blew the whistle, and I think I went in for a head throw. And I just grabbed him, and I took him down, and I almost got the pin. But all I needed was the takedown. And, you know, the ref was just waiting to see if I would pin him, and then finally the guy got off his back, and I won the match. And yeah, it was funny, because that was like my one shot at getting the Wrestler of the Night award. And instead, the guy who won it that night was the guy who was one weight class above me, and he pinned his guy in like 30 seconds and ran right out the building through the double doors to the bathroom. He had to shit his pants.
Jeez.
It was funny. He was always sucking weight, you know, because he was a 189-pounder, but he really weighed like 200. And, you know, so he was always sucking weight, and he would eat, like, a ton of crap right after the weigh-in. And so he had shit. He bolted from the mat as soon as he pinned the guy. He bolted. He like, barely waited for the ref to raise his hand, and he literally busted through the double doors to go to the bathroom. Well, that was my best match ever. And that just shows you. You gotta recognize that moment to see it in their eyes. Even if you are tired, you got to act it out like you're not. You got to be intimidating in some respect whenever you're going into any competition with somebody one-on-one like that. But anyway, we don't want to steal the show here from you, Bob. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about, you know, your background, how you got into boxing, how you became a corrections officer, that sort of thing.
Let me see. I've been in the correction office almost 10 years now. I was in the Corps. I was in the Marine Corps. I was a grunt in the Marine Corps. And when you're in the field, actually, we did a lot of boxing on the field a lot, and I enjoyed it. And we actually fought in we were in Russia and Ukraine and all those places, and we did joint task force training. And so the guys that we trained with in Russia and stuff like that, we trade gear and you know, and stories and stuff like that, and they'd use our weapons, we use their weapons. But on off time, we boxed. We spot, you know, we kind of like on our own went off and we took the toughest Marines and they took their toughest, and we used to go at it. And I always enjoyed it. I was, you know, I was always the first one to raise my hand to get in there and you know, want to go with these guys. And that's how it all, I knew I liked to, you know, get in the, you know, fight in front of people and I enjoyed it. And so when I got out of the Corps, I joined the corrections. And like I've been there for going on 10 years now, and I just figured I took this opportunity. I've always liked to box. I'd stopped for a while. I'm 40 years old, and I figured this would be a great opportunity to get myself back in shape and you know give it a shot. And I've been training like I really have. I couldn't have done it anymore. My coach told me today. He's a pro fighter for 40 years. His name's Freddie. He told me. He says I'm ready. So, I mean, he wouldn't say that if he didn't mean it. So that made me feel good.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to it. And you know, it sounds like you're definitely working at it. What would you say is the most important thing you do to get ready for a fight like this?
Well, basically, I just had to, you know, just get my endurance back and get my wind back and just my speed and my power and I jumped a lot of rope. I got in the ring a lot and got my defense and my footwork down and it takes a lot to get it back. You gotta, you know, when you throw a jab, you gotta make sure it snaps, and if you don't have that snap and you know you don't have the right hand movement and all that, so everything is, you know, on detail. And if you don't have that, the guy will, you know, could be a much better fighter than you, and you'll feel it.
Right.
You know. So.
And as far as the corrections world, what would you say was the worst day you had on the job?
I worked at Norfolk for a while. I don't know. I really haven't really gone through too much, to tell you the truth.
Pretty much.
I always carry myself, you know, I treat everybody with respect. I don't walk around like, you know, like a badass or anything like that, so I don't look for trouble. And basically, I haven't really gotten too much mix-up, you know, which is good, you know.
I mean, you know, as an inmate and as an officer, I would think it's kind of like military school, the way where they say, you know, you got to have camouflage.
Right. Exactly.
You got to just blend in. You know, you can't stand out too much or people will want to take you out.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's on how you carry yourself, you know. If you walk around timid, then they'll see that. But if you also walk around like you're like your chest out and you're better than everybody, they'll see that also. You know, you just kind of, you know, get through the day, you know, treat everybody the same.
So the prisoners are pretty well behaved, but for the most part, you'd say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it depends where you work. I mean, there's different, you know, different facilities.
Right.
You know, Norfolk, Framingham, I worked at Framingham. Framingham was a women's prison, and that's difficult to work at because it's a mental death. You know, it's a different, it's a whole different environment, you know. It's just a lot more difficult to deal with. You jump around the state. I've done background investigations to the state and whatnot. You know, you go interview the new guys coming up, and that, you know, I found that to be interesting because I was on the road for a little while. You know, I've done a bunch of different jobs in the department, which makes it good.
Okay.
So.
Well, either way, you see a lot of interesting stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I've done 10 years, and I'm all, you know, 9 and some change, and it's gone by real fast.
Yeah.
The department's treating me pretty good.
My uncle, Tom Hartley, worked at one of the facilities, I forget which one, for years as a guard. But he didn't like the politics of it.
Yeah.
He ended up becoming a carpenter. He's in the union now, so he's all set.
I can get into all that too, but it's, you know.
All right, well, as far as the boxing goes, you know, if you know anything else about your opponent that you're looking to exploit or...
You know, I mean, my opponent changed a few times. My first time, I was fighting this guy, Ricky Vasquez. He was 6'4", 230. He had 7 fights. And then it changed to a Quincy. Then I was told I was fighting a police officer from Quincy because they couldn't find me a fight.
Okay.
And then that changed, and now I'm fighting a New York firefighter. That's 230. And I'm not sure how many fights he has, but I'm 250, and I have no fights under my belt, so it should be interesting. You know, we'll see what happens.
Well, no official fights, but
right,
you're king of the underground fights, right?
Well, I'm not afraid to take a punch. That's all. You know, what I mean, I think it's gonna be. You know, a little nerve-wracking going. If anybody tells you they're not afraid to get in the ring, they're lying to you. You're gonna have nerves. You know, even when you spar, you have nerves build up.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's
funny though. Sometimes, you know, you get in that zone, you get that relaxed feeling before a fight. I've had that happen to me a few times. You know, it's just weird because sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you're gonna win. Get in there and you can have that confidence. But then other times, like last time I sparred, actually, I had a moment like right before the fight when I'm looking over at this kid, and he turned out to be pretty good, you know, but they told me he's pretty green, you know, they threw me in there with this kid. And he ends up winning the freaking New England Golden Gloves, broke my rib.
Oh, man.
But, you know, I remember feeling right before that fight, looking at this kid, you know, he's pretty in good shape, you know, and I'm like, man, what am I getting into here? And, you know, I did all right for the two rounds I went with him for, but he hit me with one right hook, just boom, right to the rib, and I didn't know it was broken, but I took a knee, and I took my 10 seconds, and I got up, and then, you know, went right back at him. But, you know, after the fact, I was like, geez, you know, that kid was good. And then he went all the way to the New England Golden Gloves, and he went to the Nationals, too. I don't know how well he did in the Nationals. I don't even know if he's done it yet. Supposed to go to the Nationals and wanted to go. He took me out pretty cleanly. The good thing I could say about it is he was trying to knock me out. You know, he was trying to go for the headshots, and he really couldn't land anything on me because I'm pretty good at bobbing and weaving, but he caught me in the corner with that freaking hook that almost did me in the second round. But, you know, it's just a matter of sticking with it, you know. I took a break from it after that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Gained a little of the weight that I lost back over the winter because I never felt like running in the snow.
Yeah.
You know, but now I got no excuses. I just reconnected my heavy bag and getting back into it. But it's tough. Anyway, looking ahead at this event. Do you got your whole family going and everything like that? You know, you got local people that you're...
Oh, my God, I have a lot of friends and family going. More than I thought. Like, you know, all the guys I grew up with, and I have some really cool buddies flying in, and all my buddies from work, Norfolk, Framingham. I got my brothers, everybody. You know, I'm going to have a lot of support there, and it feels good to have that.
Nice.
Guys from the gym that training me, they got a couple of them are going up. Guys, you know, my trainer I met, his name's Fred, he's unbelievable. I became good friends with him. He's going to bring some of his guys up, and they all are pro fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the guys he set me up with to spar with were pro, was a pro fighter. And I learned, oh, my God, you know why they're pro. You know, and I learned
that. Up at Norwich when I ran the boxing club, who was like a multiple Golden Gloves champion. And he used to actually go to Burlington, Vermont all the time. Norwich is in Northfield. And it's like an hour away to Burlington. And he and this kid, Richard Ginetti, I'll never forget him. He's like this big, fat Italian kid.
Yeah.
And him and Reyes, little Reyes, he's a little Mexican guy, but he was a Golden Gloves champion. Him and Ginetti used to go up to Burlington, and they used to get into street fights with people on purpose. And, I mean, they should have been videotaping it. But I don't know what they did it for. You know, they just get into these street fights, and you'd hear about it. And the poor kid comes back, Reyes, from one of the street fights, and he scratched his cornea.
Oh,
but he used to come to our boxing practices every now and then and show us the ropes. You know, here I am trying to be the coach, and I go in and spar with this kid who's like 30 pounds lighter than me, and he's like, you know, tossing me around. He's just a world of difference, you know, between an amateur and a pro, and just even somebody who's been around in the amateurs like him.
Yeah.
It's a huge difference. You know? It's a real deal. When you just choose to do boxing for a living, yeah, you get to that point. You gotta be something dangerous.
Yeah. The guy that by the pro that I fought, he had like 40 pounds on me. And I when he hit me I felt it. I was like, oh jeez. And then you either, you know, you either react to it or you you go into that defense mode because you don't want to get hit again, you know, and that's the choice you make, you know. That's a big part of a fight too. You know, after you get hit hard, you know, some guys react to it or some guys kind of cower down, you know. It's all on how you take a punch, you know.
Yeah. Or the worst reaction I ever saw to a fight where a kid was losing was when the kid actually got disqualified for holding. And he kept, every time the guy would come in and trade with him, he would just hold the guy.
Yeah.
He was a local kid, too. He had, like, a weird record. But I'd never seen a guy just get disqualified for holding.
No, I never seen it either.
The crowd was really giving him shit, too. They didn't like
yeah.
it. But what would you say is your favorite punch? Do you have a favorite punch yet, or you like them all?
I don't know. I guess... The overhand right for you, I like that. You know, whatever. I like a power punch. I like the jab, but when I land a nice right, it feels good. You know.
I always threw too many hooks. I like my left hook. I tried to model after Mike Tyson's.
Yeah.
You can never throw too many hooks, Rich. I've been telling you that for 3 years.
Tony liked the hooks too. See, Tony and I were supposed to fight back in the day when we were in college.
Yeah.
We were in the same boxing circuit. At the same time, same year and everything. Fought the same people.
Same weight class.
Yeah, same weight class.
Just different brackets.
Yeah. I only had one semester to do it, and if it was going to happen, it would have happened then. But I don't know. I'm not old yet, so.
Yeah.
I know Tony's not completely retired either. We might have to fight a battle of the badges 3.
Yeah. I can't believe it's next week. It's coming so fast.
I know, but what I can't believe is that it's going so smoothly. Like, you know, I've been part of a few other events.
Rich, you better knock on wood now you said that.
Yeah.
I just did. But, you know, I've been to a lot of other events, you know, where not the same people were involved, but, you know, where all this stuff was being prepped and everybody was all excited and, you know, you realize at the last second not enough promotion was done. So, you know, the way it sounds now, that's not a possibility. So it's a good thing. You know, it feels like we're ahead of the game.
Yeah.
Because I saw that. The first people who sponsored my website is this company called Extreme Cage Fighting. Or not Extreme Cage Fighting. That's the one that's out there now. But Extreme Contact Fighting out in Iowa. At this big, huge event, Coliseum Carnage, they got Iowa State Coliseum, and this huge stadium seats like 60,000 people, and they didn't even get 1,000 people to show up to this event.
Really?
You know, like, just unbelievable. They spent like $50,000 putting this show together, and they couldn't even get 1,000 people to show up.
Wow.
So they flew me down there, they treated me like a VIP and everything. I was part of the whole production. I did my best to market it for them, but, you know, you have to market it locally, an event like that.
Right.
And they obviously didn't do their job in that respect, but.
Is it true that I heard the Red Sox are going to be there for the VIP lounge? Is that true, or?
Well, the guy that's...
Some of the Red Sox players are going to go up there and sign autographs and stuff.
I don't know if that's going to be a whole big
that's
deal.
That's just something I heard. I wasn't sure if it was true or not.
I haven't heard anything about that, but... But I should say, yeah, there's definitely a possibility that there's going to be some Red Sox involvement because the guy who's promoting the event has a real big job with the Sox. I'm doing a website for him. I already did the website, but I'm working on some stuff with him, with Louis Tiant involved.
Yeah.
And I know that the guy has a job that had him at spring training with the Red Sox for the last few weeks. So he's definitely a big deal with the organization. I'm not sure exactly what he does. He's VP or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, he does well for himself, and he has the he does the charity. He's the guy that put together this whole idea of the CRASH program, the charity there, the Scientific Social Solutions. So, you know, he's behind a lot of the stuff that's, you know, the main focus of this event.
Right, right.
And if anybody's going to bring some Red Sox stuff, it would be him.
Yeah. It was just something I heard in common. I wasn't, you know, sure, but I just heard it through the grapevine.
I'm waiting for it to appear on the Jumbotron, if anyway. That's what I'm waiting for. That would be great, you know.
Yeah.
Big sign on the Jumbotron for Battle of the Badges. Put you up there in the big poster.
I haven't even seen the poster yet.
No, you're on it.
No, I haven't seen it. I got to see this thing. I haven't seen it. Is that the one they're hanging around? They're hanging that up everywhere?
Oh, yeah. They're going to put it all up and down Dorchester Ave from what I heard today.
Really?
You're right in the middle, right next to Mikey O'Donnell there.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Looks good.
That's funny.
You don't get the tough looks on your face. Some of the New York guys in their photo, they're smiling, but none of you guys are.
Oh, no, you can't be smiling in the photo, man. You gotta look tough.
O'Donnell might be cracking once, but everybody else is like, I'm gonna kill you.
Good. Right. Yeah, I know the other guys are training really hard. My buddy Tommy and Marky, they've been going at it pretty hard, pretty confident.
Yeah. The photo of the FDNY boxing guys, this is a pretty diverse group, you know. It's like one guy from every part of town.
Yeah. How many heavyweights? I think I'm on the super heavyweight, and I think is that how that goes? The heavyweights and the super heavyweights category. How many fights are there actually? Do you know? And how many?
At least 10, maybe 11, yeah. From what I heard.
Okay.
And there's you know the rivalry of the FDNY versus New England guys, but there's also at least one match where it's going to be local guys fighting each other.
Okay. Yep.
Billy Traff versus Adam Quinn. I don't know if you heard about that fight, but that's actually a rematch of a Golden Gloves fight.
Really.
Billy won the first time, and this is Adam's chance to get revenge. So it's gonna be a good fight.
Okay, good.
It's kind of like if Tony and I were to fight, but we never fought the first time.
Yeah, it would be like the grudge match in first party.
Right. Anyway, we're looking forward to it, of course. I'm gonna be there. I'm gonna be doing. Actually, they upgraded me to co-announcer today, so I'm gonna be spouting all kinds of stuff about the sponsors up there and
okay.
Do my thing with the tribute to the fallen and whatever else they need me to do.
Good, good.
And the other guy is gonna be a guy with probably 50 more years of experience than I have, Pitt Perrin. He was just telling us a funny story. He didn't really elaborate as much as he did with us when we had him on the show, but today he went off on the story about Marvin Hagler winning a fight in England and getting pelted with the bottle.
Oh, the fight fan. Answer. I remember that.
Yeah, he was telling everybody that's playing this event here about it, and I guess they actually had to really hover over Marvin and block him from the bottles coming in, because at Wembley Stadium where they fought over in London, the guy lost the fight, but he didn't. The ref didn't call the fight. It was the guy's own corner that called the fight. And he's from London, you know. So in Wembley Stadium there, they can bring in beer. And, you know, they can have the bottles in case of beer. You know, you can buy it right there. You can buy a case of beer and bring it to your seat and have the bottles right at your feet right there. So I guess after the fight, when it looked like the ref stopped the fight instead of the guy's own corner, the crowd went nuts and they started hawking bottles at the ring. And Pitt was just a trainer and a cut man for Hagler. And, you know, he worked with the Petronelli brothers and stuff. Almost all through Marvin's career. And so he ended up having to literally, like, hover over Marvin while bottles were getting thrown at them. They had to have a police escort out of the place. took one for the team, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Like, a bottle to the head or two. But he's a great guy. He knows his stuff. He does a lot of the emceeing at some of the events I've seen. He did the Rocky Marciano tournament and did a good job. I went to that. He was telling everybody all the rules about the amateur boxing today, so they hit it straight. They had to figure out how many doctors were going to be there, and all that stuff today.
Right. The Masters is six. I mean, the glove size is 16, right?
I'm not sure, but that's usually what you spar with. So that's what I train with. Actually, I hit the bag with 16-ounce gloves just because when I sparred the couple times that I did when I was coming back last year. I noticed, that was the one thing that I noticed, that, you know,
yeah.
The glove weight is a huge difference if you're trying to spar, I mean, if you're trying to hit the bag all the time with bag gloves, and then you go and spar with 16-ounce gloves.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You're like, what the hell happened? Where did my arms go?
You know, well, they were saying 12, and then I heard Masters were always 16.
Yeah.
So, I don't know the true answer to that, but I've been training, like you said, with the heavier gloves, too, just in case, but I prefer the lighter, you know, the 12-ounce, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, either way, you know, it's, I think you guys, are you guys 2-minute rounds?
Yeah.
Yeah, so 2-minute rounds is a little easier.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
A minute break, I guess a minute break between 3 rounds.
In MMA, I noticed, you know, the one thing that goes first is your arm muscles, you know?
Yeah.
So in a 3-minute round, it's a lot bigger problem than it would be in a 2-minute round.
Yeah. Well, that's why when we're sparring, we always do, you know, the 3-minute rounds or the 30-second break.
Yeah, actually, I was just going to say that, you know, because I just tried it, and I just got back into it this past couple weeks. I started hitting the bag again, and I changed it. I had the thing set at 30-second rounds by accident, the timer. So I did the 30-second rounds for the first time. I just followed through with it, you know, instead of changing it. I was like, screw it, I'm already doing it.
Yep.
So I did the 30-second rest, and it was like, whoa, that's a whole different workout, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, they actually also came out with a recent study saying that if you exercise for 20 minutes at a time and then have a rest, it's a lot better for you than, you know, taking longer rests. Or, you know, doing an all-out, you know, two-hour non-stop routine. You know, if you just break it down into 20-minute periods,
yeah,
it's better off for you. So, you know, having those 30-second breaks instead of the minute might actually be better for you than,
right,
you know, having the extra time to rest.
I'm going to tell you something, Rich. As you know, Dr. Cox, who was my college coach, yeah, great coach, great man. I mean, he was big in the sport of amateur wrestling for a long time. Then he became big in the sport of amateur boxing, coached at Lock Haven University. I think he's getting ready to retire. But, I mean, he was an assistant manager for the 1996 Olympics team. I mean, knows his shit. But the problem is, he gets distracted sometimes. And, I mean, I remember when he'd be training, and I'd be at Lock Haven training, and he'd be like, okay, he'd be doing drills, whether the drill's on the heavy bag, or skipping rope, shadow boxing, or anything. So he, instead of having the timer on, he would be timing it with his stopwatch. And because he'd be going the round or whatever, and our gym was in the back of, like, the men's locker room, so when guys would be leaving the locker room, you know, they'd always pass through one door, and there'd be the little gym off to the side. And he'd be sitting there, hi, Dr. Cox, hey, how you doing? Come on over here, I haven't talked to you in a while. So he'd be talking to one of his professor buddies, and that 2-minute round, that 3-minute round is now about a 7 or 8 minute round. We all be like, you're doing the drill, hitting the bag, or skipping. We'll be like, time, Doc, time. Oh, yeah, sorry, but then went a little over. Yeah, what did you go over? Ah, it was about 6 minutes. That'll be good for you. Okay, we're going to take a 30-second break now. Mm-hmm. Okay, you ready? That was a 30-second break.
Yeah.
All of about 4 seconds.
Yeah, we had Gordon Calkins for coach. And speaking of Marines,
Gordy, I know Gordy very well.
Bob, this guy was a true Marine. You know, they say there's never no such thing as a former Marine, right? Probably
right.
Heard that.
Yeah.
Well, this guy must have been like late 60s, early 70s at least, when we were boxing Tony. And he would get us up at like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning every Wednesday, and he would go on the 3-mile run with us. Now, he wouldn't do anything else with us boxing-wise except tell us what to do when we were at practice. But this guy would literally run the 3 miles with a cigar in his mouth.
That's great.
He would do it, you know, just like the stereotypical Marine with the cigar in his mouth outrunning his recruits. You know, he would do it and get away with it. And he would be leaving people in the dust, you know. I would be maybe passing him every now and then, but.
Well, I have to tell you, my favorite Goody Coffee story was down that time, and we were talking about it earlier, about being in shape, and the guy was on the team for a year and a half before I got the fight, and this guy, Willie Taylor, and Willie was not in shape, and I don't know how that was possible with Goody being his coach, but maybe because I think he was so nervous going into the fight. He was main event for the first time ever against the guy who was an All-American and me. But we get down there, and, Gordy, they're doing the weigh-ins. I'm a pound over, pound and a half. And this is this very exclusive men's club down in Virginia, in Richmond. And they send me to the sauna. So I'm going in there, and I had to pay a sauna fee because everything down there was like, you know, you had to pay for everything. And Gordy walked down there and said, "Yo, you let him in this sauna. He's our main event tonight. You don't let him in, you have no main event." They opened that door for me, and it was, "Come in right now, young man. Have a seat."
Nice.
Yeah, he was a good guy.
Gordy was a great guy.
He knew what he was doing, that's for sure. Never gave me bad advice.
Yeah. Rich, I think we're boring our guest.
I guess so.
No, not at all. No, I'm very interesting.
Well, Bob, is there anybody you want to give a shout-out to or thank?
Can't Get Right, the guys down there have been helping me a lot. The guy Freddie, he's been amazing. Just all the guys, you know, that have been helping me train. And it should be pretty interesting. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, we will definitely see you at the event. We're going
to
try.
Looking forward to meeting you.
We're going to try to get in touch with all the fighters, too. We're going to try to put together, it's not official yet, but I'm throwing around the idea of doing a press conference type deal on the phone, conference call.
Okay.
With some of the fighters, if you're interested in that, it'll get you in on that.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, we'll hopefully do that before the event. It's the 15th today. We got 9 more days till it kicks off, so. It's definitely going to happen within the next week if we do it at all. So
yeah, absolutely. I'm very interested in that.
We're going to be putting together the program book, so I'll be in touch with you to get some info on that. And probably a better picture you'll want in there. I don't know if you want the one with the cut and paste, the one from the
I don't care.
The black eye photo.
I think it's a little tough. It makes it look ready to go.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. let you know that was fun.
And
anyways.
His luck. You just keep the puck
out. Yeah.
Well, it's funny, though. You know, once people know that you're a boxer, they treat you differently. You know, like when I first went to the Air Force Academy my freshman year, and I had the intramural boxing match, and I come back with my black eye.
Yeah.
Really the worst beating I ever took in my life, closest I ever came to getting knocked out, so I wasn't ready for it. And those are 2-minute rounds.
Yeah.
There's intramurals, and I got in there with like a junior, and he just took me apart. And I come back to the squad there with my black eye, and everybody's treating me differently. Oh, man, he's tough. Get out of his way.
Yeah.
With the black eye. Even if, I couldn't say, you should see the other guy.
Yeah. I know. People, they did get a lot of attention because it was a good one.
Yeah.
And people had a lot of comments on it. Yeah, I had to walk around. You know, I had to walk around work like that too. You know, so it wasn't. And it lasted forever. Usually, sometimes they go in a week or something like this. Thing lasted for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So it was. I felt that it was a good punch.
Well, hopefully you learned something from it. That's all that counts, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You either keep your hands up or duck.
Exactly.
All right. Well, it's been great having you on, and I'll look forward to meeting you in person at the event, and you know, we'll get some good shots of you in the ring, hopefully, and you know, we'll definitely hope for you to get the win and prove the shots of us winning this whole rivalry deal. You know, I want to see more New England guys win than New York guys, of course.
Good. Yeah, it was great talking with you guys. I really appreciate the time, and I appreciate all your stories and stuff like that. It was nice to talk to you.
Yeah, no problem. You know, we'll definitely keep you in mind, and we'll see you at the event, and we'll write it up on the website afterwards and everything, and keep everybody informed, and we'll be in touch for the program and all that stuff.
Okay, sounds great.
All right, have a good night.
You too. Good night.
Best of luck to you, okay?
Thanks, buddy. Take care of yourself. All right.
Chill.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, shoo. What else do we have left to talk about? Oh, The Ultimate Fighter. I did want to mention that. I watched The Ultimate Fighter show just this morning. This afternoon, actually. I missed it. I keep missing it, you know. But usually, you know, I figure out what's on for prime time every night, and I try to watch it. You know, I got my shows that I watch every week, and usually when The Ultimate Fighter is in season, I never miss one. But lately, last 2 weeks, it seems like I just haven't been in the swing of things, and I missed it. I had to watch it after the fact. But thank God for illegal bootlegging and internet sites, because I watched it today, and it's pretty interesting. In the other clip that we didn't show, we didn't play, from the Dana White talking about firing Anderson Silva if he does that again, was when Dana went on to say that there was some controversy over Chuck Liddell supposed to be fighting Tito Ortiz. And I actually want to do a poll on the website for this. And we do now have a call-in number on the show, so if anybody out there wants to call in and talk about this issue. It's kind of a good controversy to stir up. But I want to do a poll. The number to call in, by the way, is 347-324-3228. And I don't have the chat window open, so if anybody's in the chat trying to talk to me, sorry. I'm going there now. But anyway, long story short, what I was trying to say is on The Ultimate Fighter, there's a little bit of a shakeup. Tito Ortiz is not going to be fighting Chuck Liddell in the near future from what I can see, and Chuck's next opponent is going to be Rich Franklin, who's another guy that a lot of people might be saying should retire, hasn't had a lot of good performances in his last couple of fights. Man, he's another guy that Anderson Silva beat the ever-living crap out of. But now at UFC 115, I believe, they're scheduled to have a Chuck Liddell versus Rich Franklin fight instead of Tito Ortiz versus Chuck Liddell. So I wanted to put up a poll on the website trying to have people guess what led to this, you know, what is the reason for this. And apparently Dana White can't say anything. It's not that he won't. He legally can't, because I guess the show, a lot of the money behind the Ultimate Fighter show comes from Spike. Spike puts a lot of the production value into it, and you know, they have a lot of control over it. So they want the news and the whole scenario of how that happened, how that fight got called off, to come out on the show and the show only. Nobody leaks it beforehand. So Dana can't say anything, you know, which is probably torture for him, because you know how much he likes to talk about shit. And it's bad to all people. Especially his own people, bastard. But anyway, Dana has said that it's coming out on the show. What's happened that's led to this? And I have a few theories of my own that I want to put into a poll. First one I have that makes the most sense is Tito re-injures himself. That's my scenario there. And we do see on the previews for the next episode, we have a door-breaking incident. And they do say that there will be two fights on one show. So that leads me to believe Chuck and Tito already fought, and they fight on the next show. And that's why they're not fighting. And whether, you know, what happened afterwards, the aftermath or whatever, apparently it looks like it didn't affect Chuck as much as it affected Tito. So maybe Tito lost. I don't know. That's my other theory. And the third one would be that they got into some other kind of issue with Tito that led to them, you know, separating themselves from him. Like some kind of drama happened with Tito that, or he retired. Maybe he retired. I don't know. But we'll call that category other. But I think the first two are the most likely. There was already a fight, or Tito got injured. Because Chuck's still fighting the next fight, you know, pretty much on time. So, you know, it didn't affect him as much as it did Tito. So something happened, and Tito is in trouble with the UFC, I think. Either way. And we know he's got a history of injuries. He injures his back a lot. So I think that's very likely that he was injured. But you have to tune into The Ultimate Fighter to find out.
No, no, you...
I know you won't do that, so I'll have to tell you. But other than that, on the show, the actual show was pretty interesting because they had to throw a guy off for having a broken jaw. It's the first time I've... Well, not the first time I've seen an injury, but the other last time I saw was like a guy had a bad elbow and they threw him off. But it wasn't too bad a thing. But this time they replaced the guy with a kid who had a real good fight to try to get on the show, and he ended up missing the cut. But he had showed a lot of heart, and you know, put the guy on the ground with one of his punches before he lost the fight. You know, he was close to winning it himself before he went down. So it'll be interesting to see who wins this whole thing. Chuck Liddell's team is up 2-0 in the tally. He's won his first two fights, and it was kind of interesting because in the first episode when they picked the fighters, Dana White was talking trash about how he didn't think Chuck had the right team, but maybe he had the right strategy. But so far, both of Chuck's guys won their fights. I mean, this last one went to overtime, and it was an interesting matchup. The guy, you know, his last name is Hammertree. It's just an unbelievable striker. Has a crazy right hand, but the other guy was very good with the jiu-jitsu. So he ended up, you know, getting a better wrestling and more takedowns, more activity in the last round. So she pulled it out. But, you know, it was just very interesting to see. First guy Chuck picked was a guy from Australia named Kyle Noak. I have heard of that guy before. I knew who he was. And he's like one of those guys, kind of like the Roy Nelson of the show. He might be the guy that wins it all because he's got the most experience, I think, and the best record. But, you know, it's an interesting fight. It's worth watching if you can catch it again on a repeat or whatever. Or if you're like me, you can find it online. It was a pretty decent episode. There was it's an interesting thing, you know, with this reality TV deal. You know how they always try to add drama to all these shows. And it was kind of funny the first few years of The Real World. I don't know if you ever watched that show, Tony. Did you ever watch that show, The Real World?
Nope.
Never?
No.
Never? Well, I actually started watching it because a couple of the guys who were on it were from VMI one year.
Oh.
The Seattle year that they had. Two VMI cadets were actually on the show. So I actually did watch it. And make a long story short, you know, The Real World always had a guy on it who was gay. You know, they always had the token freaking gay guy.
Yep, always.
Always, yeah. They could have some drama built around. Well, this time, they got a gay fighter, it looks like. And it's, like, almost undeniable. I mean, the guy could just be feminine, of course, like every gay guy people talk about. They don't know. But this guy was, like, they had a scene in the show. It was wicked funny. The guy's, like, doing the pose with the hand, one hand on the hip. In the doorway with his freaking underwear on, and he'd just gotten like a back massage from the masseuse, who's like a trained, you know, whatever, physical therapist or something. And you know, he's getting a massage from him at like 2 a.m. And he goes into the next room in his underwear, and he's doing that pose. And the wise ass of the house, of course, says something. And he's like, I don't like that pose, you know. So he's snapping back at him, and he refuses to change his pose. And then there comes time when they're sparring these same two guys, and he calls the guy a bitch. And all of a sudden, he's like, he's wicked pissed about it. He's like complaining to Tito, oh, he called me a bitch, and you shouldn't call your teammates names. And I was like, oh, yeah, this guy's gay. It's like undeniable. Anybody who gets that sensitive about being called a bitch, that's definitely
gay. Yeah, he is one.
Definitely gay. And, you know, so I wonder whether they did that on purpose or, you know, he was just a good fighter that was on their radar, but on their gaydar, I should say. He was on the UFC's gaydar. But I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen that on the Ultimate Fighter before. It's going to be a new dynamic. I didn't notice this the first episode, but they definitely made it a point to highlight it on this one. So, you know, obviously that's going to be another aspect of the controversy we'll see. But other than that, the fight's coming up. We're going to talk about, bring up Sure Dog, see what we got on the fight week schedule. The UFC keeps spoiling us. I mean, they give us like 2 or 3 shows a month sometimes these days. But if this is one of those weekends where we got it off, just had one. I know Strikeforce has been putting out a ton of press about their next big event. You know, it's funny, the whole idea with Anderson Silva and Dana White talking about cutting him. And, of course, you know, there was that big controversy over him fighting Roy Nelson. I mean, Roy Nelson. Roy Jones Jr.
Yeah.
And, you know, Roy lost his last fight there with Bernard. So maybe that could happen sooner than we thought. But I was thinking, actually, there's a guy from Strikeforce. I'm not sure if they're the same weight, but Bigard Mousasi. And he's the nastiest fighter I've ever seen. He's almost as good as Jose Aldo, I would say, pound for pound. Aldo's obviously much lighter, but he's pretty good, and he fights for Strikeforce. And that's the one guy I would like to see Anderson fight that I think could take him. You know, at least give him a good fight. But we'll see. We will see if that happens. I don't know. I wouldn't think Anderson Silva, even if he did clown around just like that, and, you know, even with Dana White threatening to fire him if he does, I don't think he should be in fear for his job. He's just too popular. I mean, even with doing that stuff, people like him too much. He's just that good. He hasn't been beaten in so long. It's just, you know, nobody can beat him. Nobody can touch him. And he's just trying to make that point, whether good or bad, whether you love him or hate him for doing it, he is that good. So to throw him to another organization would be, like, just stupid at this point. He's that big a name, and he's on that much of a roll. And you know what, you know, firing a black guy, you know what that's going to cause.
Yeah, right.
White guy, firing a black guy. Come on now. It's not going to take too long for the people screaming racism to come out of the woodwork. I don't think he's had to do that in a while. It's always white guys Dana fires. Guys like, what was his name there? That's the last time I think of the last guy he fired. Travis Luter, that was one of the guys he fired, was sponsored by Zions. I remember talking about him because he asked Dana White, where's the Zions money? And I remember that because why is he asking Dana White for it? Why isn't he asking Zions? What's going on there? Anyway, that's another story. We have a whole lot of events going on this weekend. Bellator Fighting Championships 14 is going on in Chicago. That's today, tax day. It's going on tonight, so if you're not there, you missed it. Rec MMA is putting on Unite for Brian's fight tomorrow in Gatineau, Quebec. Ring of Combat 29 is going on tomorrow in Atlantic City, New Jersey. It's Tropicana Resort and Casino. Peru Fighting Championship here in Peru is happening in Lima. And we have Southport Sharks in Queensland, Arizona. I don't know, that must be an arena, the Southport Sharks Arena, or some kind of town named Southport Sharks. I don't know, that's weird. That's what the location says. But this is Cage Fighting Championships 13, also going on Friday. Battleground Challenge Friday is going on in Waipahu, Hawaii. Get it right, Rich. 808 Battleground is putting that on, Battleground Challenge, at the Waipahu Philcon. And Strike Force, as I said, does have an event this weekend at the Bridgestone Arena in Nashville, Tennessee. It's on Saturday. So we'll probably be talking about that next week. Let me just check out that card. Also, we have MMA Big Show, A Prodigy Returns, at the Belterra Casino Resort and Spa in Florence, Indiana. So, Tulsa, Oklahoma, at the Expo Square Pavilion, Freestyle Cage Fighting 41. Dojo Combat 1 is going on in Brazil on Saturday. Tokyo, of course, has a bunch of events. Saturday, they have 47 Impact Deep, is the organization that replaced Pride, D-E-E-P, Deep. We have Wild Bill's Fight Night, number 26, going on in Duluth, Georgia. The Four Bears Casino and Lodge in Newtown, North Dakota, is having World Tour 2010 on Saturday. And let's see. We've got a Sunday. We have four events on Sunday. Differ Ariake in Tokyo, Japan has ZST 24 over in Poland, in a town I don't even want to try to pronounce. We have MMA Challengers 4, put on by MMAC, at the Sombierki Heat and Power Plant Hall. Alright, the New Dawn Metro Radio Arena, Newcastle, England, on Sunday, and Long Beach Fight Night 8 in Long Beach, California, at the Hall of Champions Gym. That's about it. And just looking at that Strike Force card, which is probably going to be the only one that's going to be on Big TV. We have Jake Shields versus Dan Henderson. Got a crossover from the UFC. This is going to be Dan's first fight at Strike Force. Came from Pride, so he's no stranger to other organizations. His record is 25-7, with 11 TKOs, KOs, I guess, T/KO, one submission, 13 decisions. Alright, and we have Gegard Mousasi, I was just talking about. He's a light heavyweight, so he is right around Anderson Silva's weight. And he is 28-2-1. Mousasi. But, I didn't mention Jake Shields' his record. He's fighting Dan Anderson. Main event for the big belt. Jake's record is 24-4-1 with 3 KOs, 10 submissions, 11 decisions. Mousasi, I said, is 28-2-1, 17 KOs, 9 submissions, 2 decisions. So he rarely leaves it to the judges. I think he'd be a great opponent for Silva. They did cross-promotional stuff, but you know they never will. Or if Silva ends up with Strike Force. We also have King Mo Lawal on that card. What did I do? We'll have King Mo Lawal, actually, who was mentioned. Actually, he when we did that interview with Scott Casper, Mo Lawal called him in the middle of it. He's fighting Mousasi there for the Strike Force Light Heavyweight Championship Saturday night. And also Gilbert Melendez, who's just coming off a vicious war. Forget who it was against, I'll tell you in a second. He's fighting Shinya Aoki. Before I leave the Lawal fight, let me tell you his record. 6-0, 5 knockouts, 1 decision. Which isn't all that much compared to the guy he's fighting, but you never know on any given day. We'll see. I think Silva would be a much better opponent for Musasi. We'll see. Like I said. Alright. So, Melendez. Let's see his record here. His record is 17-2-0. 10 TKOs. 10 KOs. 1 submission, 6 decisions. And he's fighting Shinya Aoki. Aoki is 23-4. Only 1 knockout. 14 submissions. 6 decisions and 2 other. That's kind of funny. He's got 2 others. Japanese guy, as you might expect. Real tough, he's been around. Oh, there's his record. Gilbert Melendez just came off a real war with Josh Thompson. 5-rounder. He won by decision. There's actually a lot of boxing, Tony. You might have even appreciated it.
There we
go. So there you go. That's pretty much it for that card. 3 main events there. We also have Jason Mahan Miller versus Tim Stout. Zach Underwood versus Hunter Warsham. Josh Shockman versus Kaley Yarborough, Dustin Ortiz versus Justin Pennington, Andrew Urich versus Dustin West, Chris Hawk versus Ovince St. Preux, and Tom Campbell versus Cody Floyd. So we got 17 minutes left in the show here. Nobody's in the chat room even. What's going on?
They didn't get his camera. He's been acting up.
We do have, let's see. We do have a call-in number. For those who would like to chat with us, if I can bring it up, I think I lost it here. What happened? Anyway. Actually, let's check the boxing news. So now I saw at least one thing worth talking about there. Vladimir Klitschko wants to fight David Haye. That's in the news. Holyfield wants to fight Haye. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, right.
I also sent you a thing on Chuck Liddell there.
I saw that.
You did read it?
Yeah, well, I looked at it. Looked at, he's having like a seizure.
I noticed that too on the show. He's watching the fight, and it's like two guys trading. And it's almost like for a second, he's living through his own fighter, you know, like he's like, what do they call that? Remote viewing? Like psychics do, supposedly. And so he got confused, like he was actually in the cage, and he's like doing the thing like where he's like getting ready to throw a punch, getting into position. And it's almost like if you're playing like a shooting game, like a first-person shooter, like Call of Duty or something. I don't know if you ever played that, but it's like, you know, when you're about to get shot or something, and you're trying to move out of the way of the bullet, even though you know it's a game. That's what he was doing. So he was caught up in the heat of the moment, but it did look kind of like he was having a stroke.
Yeah.
Chuck's kind of crazy. See, I didn't even read that. I'd seen the headline, and I did one of those things where I clicked, open new tab, and I never looked at it. I was just going to look at it later. And then I went back and I looked at it, because I was like, trying to figure out watching the Dana White video before I read that, and him talking about Chuck fighting Franklin, Rich Franklin. And I'm thinking to myself, in the back of my mind, well, how's Chuck going to fight Rich Franklin if he just had a stroke?
Yeah.
Headline says he suffered his minor stroke, you know, so I took it seriously without reading it. You know, I should have known, coming from Cage Potato, it's going to be satire. But it is kind of funny. Took it seriously for a little while. Oh, that's going to be a good story. Chuck Liddell had a stroke. And he's still fighting. Not like Teddy Bruce. Took a while, took some time off before he came back. Anyway. Let's see what else. You know, for mixed martial arts news. UFC rumored for August event in Salt Lake City. I don't know about that. Was it the late August? I think early August they're scheduled to have a fight in Boston, the Fleet Center. So I don't know how much you believe there. Well, there's an article on August 7th for a potential event, it says.
Well, let me put my battery in before I die on here. Oh, I saved myself from running out of battery.
There you go. Here's a funny story from, not really funny, from Casper, I'm assuming Wyoming.
What?
Casper, Wyoming.
They, Casper,
a fight promoter pleads guilty to writing bad checks to several fighters who participated in a mixed martial arts event he promoted. Jonathan Alexander, 50, entered the plea as part of a deal with prosecutors. Under the terms of the agreement, legal proceedings against him would be dismissed if he completed probation. He would also have to pay more than $10,000 to his victims. Oh, here we go. In an interview with a detective, Alexander said he promoted an April 2009 event that didn't earn as much as money as he had anticipated because of a blizzard. Well, he should talk to Linda Shields and the Cage FX people, because I was at their last event. Well, actually, their last event that I was at, not the last event that they did, but the last event that I went to that they did, was under the threat of blizzard conditions that set in later that night, and they still sold out the event, so that's no excuse. And you're still going to pay your fighters whether people show up or not. That's the worst thing you can do, I think, as a promoter. Yeah, I'm just not going to pay the fighters. You know, you don't pay like a vendor. They're not going to come at you and beat the shit out of you. But you pay a fighter.
Right.
Better be in hiding.
That's why I think that fighter won't do last week kind of tank. Because the guy was trying to skim all the fighters and dick them over, and they were all getting pissed off. I know I would.
Legendary wrestler Gene Kaniski dies at 81. That's your wrestling.
Yeah. By the way, I do want to, give a tribute when we get a chance. I want to, give out my thoughts and condolences on behalf of Fighting Unlimited. Gene is the family of Arthur McKinney Sr., who passed away this past weekend at the age of 90.
Wow.
Oh, listen to this, Rick. You ready for this? He refereed a world title fight in every decade since the 1930s. We're talking about a guy who refereed Joe Louis. The great Joe Louis. Refereed Joe Louis fighting. Also refereed, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s. He got the assignment for the first Ali Frazier fight in 1971. He refereed all the way up into the 2000s. Then he went mostly into judging. But the one thing that I can always say was Arthur Chaney Sr., very famous Hall of Fame referee, used to be the ring announcer and, like, the MC, not MC Hammer, but the MC at the New York Athletic Center, New York Athletic Club, and he actually was a ring announcer at two of my fights. He was a hell of a nice guy, and may he rest in peace.
Yeah, Arthur was a long-time boxing guy, fixture, really, in the sport. And I did see that when he died, there was a lot of press out there about it. I meant to mention it, but good thing you did. And, it's been around a while. It's done a lot of good things for the sport. It's been a good face for the sport. And he'll be missed. But like Rocky used to say, when it's your time, it's your time. Live the full life, that's for sure. 90 years old. What can you do? But anyway, that's really all I got. Pretty much exhausted with my news here. If there's anything really that big to talk about this weekend. We got a few stories on the blog I'll be posting before the end of the night. There's some things going on at the Tachi Palace out there in California. That's going up. Some info on the CBS Saturday Night Fights, the next CBS show. Strike Force going up. Mark Burnett is getting involved somehow with HDNet Fights. Yeah, check that out. King of the Cage, Bad Boys 2. I don't know, that's going up on the blog. I was thinking Mark Burnett, the producer of Survivor, but I think it's a different Burnett. Different guy. Let's see what else. That's pretty much it. I don't know if you talked about this last week, but also Robert Guerrero's coming back to boxing. Took some time off to help out his wife, be around his wife with the cancer treatment, so she must be doing better. She had leukemia, and she was having some trouble, so he left his title and everything. Iceman John Scully sent me a video of Arthur McCanty Jr.'s boxing skills.
That defensive move?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he took that to me.
Whoa. that's where experience comes in handy. I actually seen the same thing happen in the Buster Douglas versus Mike Tyson fight, but the ref didn't get out of the way. He got punched right in the face. Same situation as a left hook. The camera was same angle.
I've got a fight on tape. And this, you know, like sometimes you just happen to stumble on something by luck. Going back 20 years ago, Rich. It was about a month or so after the Tyson Douglas fight. And I mean, I was really starting to get into boxing. You know, I was 13 years old, and I would, you know, watch any fight that would be on TV. Well, for this particular night, it was supposed to be on USA. For whatever reason, I thought it was George Foreman. Maybe the TV guy had it listed wrong. So I'm all fired up. So we were visiting my grandmother in the hospital, and we rushed home, you know, for these Tuesday night fights to come to find out that it wasn't George Foreman. But they were the fights in the Blue Horizon. And that's in Philadelphia, you know. So I'm like, well, I'm going to tape it anyway. I was going to tape George Foreman's stuff, but I'm going to tape the main event. Two guys I never heard of, but I don't care. Well, the one guy ended up winning a world title. He lost that fight because of a cut, but went on to win a world title. One of the best freaking fights I've ever seen. Their names were Vincent Petway and Victor Davis. And they beat the living shit out of each other. And what was funny was, I think the fight got stopped in around like the ninth or tenth round.
Well, two rounds before it got stopped at the end of the round, the one guy threw a hook at the end of the round and clocked referee Frank Cappuccino right in the mouth and knocked him down. And the next round, they had to bring a substitute referee in while they were bandaging up Frank's mouth. But like a trooper, he came back for the final round, and then they ended up stopping it on cuts at the end of that round. But you know what? I have it all taped somewhere, and I got to break up that old tape, maybe upload it to like a DVD or something and send you a copy.
Yeah. Actually, I haven't looked at them, but I got all these DVDs from Dennis the other day. And one of them is supposed to be like vintage Marvin Hagler footage. So I can't. Well, I should have been watching that already. I'm going to get to that this weekend. I'm working like a dog, so I haven't had much time to do fun stuff like that. But definitely going to have to watch that. I'll share that with you when I get that. I don't think I'm supposed to put it on YouTube because I think it's that exclusive that nobody knows about it. So I might get sued by Marvin if I do. But
you'll get a sneak peek at it for sure.
Anyway, that's all for us. We got 3 minutes left in our slot anyway, so it's pretty much the end of the line. Do you have any parting words?
No, it came on my computer sucked. I just fixed it and it still sucks.
Well, I hope you and your computer are on better terms next week. I don't know.
Yeah, how is that? It's a piece of shit. I just fixed it a fucking month ago.
Yeah. Mine has been going like clockwork, except for the monitor. The monitor blew out a couple weeks ago. But thankfully, my roommate here decided to make his monitor into a HDTV so he could play Call of Duty in high definition. He can watch TV on his computer because he hooked up the cable to it, too. So he's got the massive hookup in there, and he had an extra computer monitor, so I didn't have to shut down my website. It was a relatively easy transition, but my computer is like 6 or 7 years old, and I put so much shit on it, you know. I'm surprised sometimes it's still going. I'm pretty good at getting off the viruses and all that crap. I'm keeping it running.
What happened? I mean, mine got really infected with the virus, and then we fixed it. And put the new antibiotic on, and I'm going to end up with shit. 90 seconds is longer than those Tyson fights. So I'm going to catch up with you next week. This is the Tornado. I'm signing out. My computer sucks. Till next week. And pretty soon I'm going to start getting this Simon Carr back on the show.
Yeah, there you go. And anybody else you have in mind, next week we do have a couple contenders for the show. Oh. Geez, I just realized we were supposed to call another guy tonight at 9. Whoops.
Good job, Rich.
Forgot about that. But we were having such a good time talking to Bob. We got ahead of ourselves. But anyway, we'll try to reschedule Mark for next week. And we're also going to have Tom Boley. So we're looking forward to it. And then after that, we can have on whoever you want, Tom.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, good night, folks.
Later.